Hi, I'm Donna from Claverack, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
This is Galen Joseph Hunter, Executive Director of Wave Farm. Our programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC sustaining supporters who provide critical monthly support to keep WGXC 90.7 FM on the air. Thank you for listening.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Emily Shimidis of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You have tuned into the River Newsroom's Hudson Valley Coronavirus Report from Lissa Harris of The River and Roger Hannigan-Gilson of The Other Hudson Valley. Go to theotherhudsonvalley.com or therivernewsroom.com for more information and links to the stories included here. This report is a collaboration with several Hudson Valley journalists, airing on WGXC 90.7 FM at midnight, 5, 7, and 9 a.m., and online in the audio archives at WGXC.org. La Voz, a Spanish-language news magazine covering the Hudson Valley, is translating these roundups and co-publishing them on its website in Spanish at lavoz.bard.edu.
As of April 1st, there are now 83,712 confirmed cases in New York State, 7,917 new. New York State, your budget's late. Budget negotiations, already complicated by the coronavirus pandemic, failed to be resolved by the annual March 31st deadline. Governor Andrew Cuomo said that despite the shadow cast by the coronavirus, he was certain the final spending package will be a, quote, robust, unquote, budget that would include many of his policy proposals set forth earlier in the year. Quote, with everything going on, we did not scale back our efforts or our ambitions, unquote, Cuomo said. Quote, you look at this budget, you would never know that anything else was going on, unquote. Definitely scaled back. New York State's cannabis legalization effort, it's too complicated a task to pull off for this year's budget, Cuomo said on March 31st. While some measures in the budget were passed late on March 31st, frequently contested bills like the bail reform law were left to be discussed on April 1st, delaying the budget another day. Final talks regarding the bail reform stalemate eventually led to an agreement between Cuomo and state lawmakers in which Cuomo will be able to make mid-year changes to the budget, depending on the state's post-pandemic finances, while also updating the controversial law passed last year, in which certain crimes that are currently ineligible for bail will become eligible. The original law eliminated cash bail for misdemeanors. The change is meant to limit the number of criminal offenders in prisons in response to the coronavirus outbreak and the already rapid rates of spread within those prisons. Corrections and parole officers at state prisons will now be able to use their own protective mask while working. The policy change comes after dozens of correction employees fell ill, including Michael Powers, the president of their union. U.S. Congressperson Elise Stefanik, who represents the 21st Congressional District in the North Country, and State Assemblyperson Billy Jones, who represents the 115th State District in the North Country, pushed for the change. Employees had been barred from bringing in their own N95 and surgical masks. The Department of Corrections and Community Supervision Acting Commissioner Anthony Annucci said masks were provided to employees who were interacting with sick inmates. There was no indication if masks would now be provided to employees other than when interacting with known cases. There were 20 confirmed cases among inmates, according to Annucci. 14 COVID-19 patients were transferred from downstate hospitals to Albany Medical Center late March 31st, the Times Union and Spectrum News report. Cuomo addressed a reporter's question about it at the April 1st daily briefing, quote, "This is one state. This is one family of New York. This is one family of the United States of America, by the way," unquote. In previous briefings, Cuomo has also talked about New York City relieving upstate hospitals later in the outbreak when they became overwhelmed. The State Department of Labor released a new PSA to help New Yorkers applying for unemployment benefits. The PSA provides information on how to apply and notes that if your unemployment filing is delayed, you will still receive everything you are owed. Announced by New York State on April 1st, Westchester-based Regeneron Pharmaceuticals is donating 500,000 test kits to New York State free of charge. We're not sure how many patient tests that translates into, but it's good news. Cuomo told us he would close New York City's playgrounds if we didn't behave, and now he's done it. Quote, "I've talked about this for weeks. I warned people that if they didn't stop the density and the games in the playgrounds, you can't play basketball. You can't come in contact with each other. That we would close the playgrounds," unquote, he said April 1st. New York State is down to just one county without a confirmed COVID-19 case, Cuomo said April 1st. And in what looks like yet another state versus county data discrepancy, he's probably wrong. The Yates County Public Health Department reported the county's first case on March 29th, though it has not appeared in the official statewide count. Cuomo's point stands, though, the coronavirus is coming for rural America. Quote, "That's what you're going to see going all across the nation. Well, we're a rural area. We're not going to get it." Oh, really? Go visit upstate New York if you want to talk about rural areas. We have rural areas. Just the way it's gone through rural New York, it will go through rural America, unquote, Cuomo said. Cuomo talked again on April 1st about the multiple models the state is using to try to predict the future of the outbreak. It's an imperfect science. One of the frustrating things about it, he said, is that as the models get more data and, quote, learn, unquote, more about how the outbreak is growing and how well people are following social distancing rules, the predictions keep changing. Right now, the state is looking at a couple of models that both predict a peak in late April. One assumes high compliance with social distancing and predicts that the state will need to hospitalize 75,000 COVID-19 patients. The other assumes minimal compliance and predicts the need for 110,000 COVID-19 hospital beds. Quote, "The model changes and the numbers change, but what we're looking at now is the apex, top of the curve, roughly at the end of April, which means another month of this," unquote, Cuomo said. "If the reality of the outbreak matches the worst-case predictions of some of the more pessimistic models," Cuomo said, "the state cannot hope to respond adequately to it." Quote, "Over 110,000 beds, there is no possible way we could get there. In some ways, an overly aggressive estimate doesn't even mean anything to us because it's just unachievable," unquote. Law enforcement may get more aggressive about people not following social distancing rules in public, Cuomo said, but he's sounding more and more frustrated that people aren't doing it voluntarily. Quote, "What else do you have to hear? Who else has to die for you to understand you have a responsibility in this?" unquote, he said, referring to people standing shoulder to shoulder to watch the USNS Comfort dock in the New York Harbor. The state updated its guideline for essential personnel in the workplace who have been exposed to a confirmed or suspected case of COVID-19 or who have been infected and are recovering. Here is today's county-by-county report on COVID-19 in the area. And it's important to remember that the numbers below show differences between what the counties are reporting and what the state is reporting, and also are driven by insufficient testing. The reporting of cases is lagging far behind actual infections, and sick people who cannot get tested are not being reported. In Westchester County, the county announced 39 deaths today, bringing its total to 64. The Westchester County Executive George Latimer said this was due to a reporting lag and not because they had all died in the last 24 hours. Lattimore read some of the names of those that died. Quote, "Now they reside in a place that we will all reside in some future date," unquote, he said. Lattimore also warned residents about social distancing in parks, saying he had come under, quote, great pressure, unquote, to close them, but had resisted because he realized the importance of the outdoors. Quote, don't make me close the parks, unquote, Latimer said. The town of Yorktown has unveiled a digital dashboard of COVID-19 data similar to those used by some local county governments. In Rockland County, there are now a total of 29 people have died from COVID-19, the county announced April 1st, 11 more than the toll released March 30th. County Executive Ed Day wants to give teeth to Cuomo's executive order banning gatherings. Day has been frustrated in recent days by what he sees as continued gatherings in the county, leading him to clash with Ramapo Police Chief and a yeshiva. Day said the order was useless without enforcement, and the language of the order, which, quote, temporarily bans all non-essential gatherings of individuals of any size for any reason, unquote, was vague, though, quote, essential gatherings have been further defined. Day says he is seeking the official approval of the State Department of Health for a county emergency order allowing enforcement in Rockland. All local emergency orders have been overruled by Cuomo's executive orders, and local governments must get state approval for all emergency orders. In Orange County, five more people in the county have died of COVID-19 on April 1st, according to County Executive Steve Newhouse. The deaths are from across the county, he said, trying to allay fears that the coronavirus was concentrated in a particular area. In Dutchess County, a 68-year-old woman died of COVID-19 at her home today, April 1st, before she could be checked on by the county health department. The woman, who had underlying medical conditions, was tested at the Vassar Brothers Medical Center emergency room after not feeling well late last week, according to a county press release. She was informed of her positive result, but, quote, the individual had not yet been transferred to the health department monitoring, unquote, according to the release. The woman was the fifth victim of the coronavirus in Dutchess County. Vassar Brothers Medical Center will transfer pediatric patients to children's hospitals during the pandemic. The Poughkeepsie Hospital will still take patients under 18 into their emergency room, but then will be transferred to the children's hospital of the parent's choice, according to a spokesperson from the hospital's parent company. A Marist alumnus and special education teacher died of COVID-19 in New Jersey on Monday. Ben Lutterer started feeling ill the weekend of March 21st and went to the hospital late last March 27th, where he was briefly placed on oxygen before being sent home, according to his wife, Brandy Lutterer. He felt better on March 29th, but his condition worsened that night. Brandy found him dead at 6 a.m. the next morning. He had no pre-existing conditions, Brandy said. He was 30. In Putnam County, the county released the number of people who died of COVID-19 in the county the day after the Examiner ran a story quoting officials confused about who had information on the deaths or even if anyone had died. Seven people have so far died in the county, two in the last 48 hours, according to Putnam County COVID-19 dashboard, which appeared on the county website for the first time April 1st. The numbers cited are from the Putnam Hospital Center in Carmel, and the county referred all questions there. The deaths occurred after March 6th, according to the dashboard, but a hospital representative told the Highlands Courant that this was the date the hospital began collecting data, not when the first person died. Not all the deceased were from Putnam County, according to the hospital representative. In Ulster County, the county is in preliminary planning with the county's largest hospital provider to set up one or possibly two field hospitals. County Executive Pat Ryan said he wanted 200 additional beds, with 100 in the next few weeks. This would complement the additional bed capacity county hospitals are already adding, including 235 beds at Health Alliance's Mary Avenue campus. Ryan and Legislature Chairperson Dave Donaldson called on county landlords to freeze rent. No one on the county level has the authority to do so, but Ryan said he would report landlords who increased rent during the pandemic to the state attorney general's office for a review for price gouging. Town of Ulster Supervisor James Quigley said he'd heard of rents rising amid the crisis. Quote, we're all in this together, unquote, he said. Quote, now is not the time to try and make money. Now is the time to help everyone survive, unquote. Kingston has seen rents skyrocket in recent years, and an attempt to implement rent control under a state law failed in February after a study concluded the city's vacancy rate was too high for the law to take effect. The Ulster County Health Department will not issue permits for campgrounds, seasonal resorts, children's camps, and bungalow colonies during the pandemic. No telling when they will be issued. More than 1,300 prepared meals were delivered to those in need in the Kingston City School District on April 1st through the city's emergency food hotline, according to an update from Mayor Steve Noble. The hotline, launched only 5 days ago, is staffed by city employees and volunteers from Rise Up Kingston and other organizations. Meals are prepared by local restaurants through the county's Project Resilience and by Family of Woodstock. People's Place Pantry is also distributing groceries equivalent to 1,800 to 4,150 meals a day through the Kingston Emergency Food Collaborative, according to Noble. The hotline can be reached at 888-316-0879 and is available in English and Spanish. Families and individuals are encouraged to call. SUNY New Paltz's own Hudson Valley Advanced Manufacturing Center began producing medical face shields in response to the local shortage of personnel protective equipment being felt in hospitals across the state. So far, the staff at the HVAMC have distributed 440 face shields to hospitals, medical centers, testing sites, and elderly care facilities. On March 27th alone, 200 shields were sent out to medical professionals across the Hudson Valley. The Bel Air Ski Center is collecting donated ski goggles for healthcare workers through the nationwide Goggles for Docs program, it announced in a Facebook post. In Sullivan County, they held their third coronavirus town hall question and answer session April 1st, and the video of the session is on the county's Facebook page. In Columbia County, Columbia Green Community College in Greenport may be used as a field hospital for COVID-19 patients. It has been placed on a list by the state, according to the Register Star, though the college's spokesperson said the college had only agreed to house people in quarantine, not, quote, people who were actively ill, unquote. The college has not been given details or had further communications with the state after they were approached, according to a spokesperson. The county announced it will begin doing video arraignments. Defendants will remain in the lobby of the county jail. Previously, they would be arraigned at town courthouses, many of which are spatially constrictive. Columbia County also extended its closure of county buildings through April 7th. Quote, this may well wind up going through till the end of April, unquote, said Board of Supervisors Chairperson Matt Morrell. Quote, but at this time, we are proceeding in two-week increments, unquote. In Delaware County, April 1st is the first day of trout season. Delaware County Board of Supervisors advise anglers to stay safe and not crowd each other in busy local trout streams. The 607, a multi-farm cooperative that collectively offers seasonal produce shares in Delaware, Otsego, and Schoharie counties, has launched an online ordering portal for local farm goods. The 607 will make weekly home deliveries of products from more than two dozen local farms from April 1st through June 3rd, when the group's produce share session begins. In Greene County, there were no major updates out of Greene County. They released very little information every day, only a sentence or two. Schoharie County, we're looking askance at the Cobleskill Times-Journal April 1st for publishing a sketchy story about a Schenectady County entrepreneur and his alleged miracle cure for COVID-19, flu, and herpes. We're not linking to it because they should do better. In today's case count update, the Schoharie County Department of Health stated, quote, we are confident that this is an undercount of cases in Schoharie County, unquote. That's not news to anyone who's been following this outbreak closely, but it bears repeating. This has been the daily coronavirus report for the Catskills in the Hudson Valley from Lissa Harris of the River and Roger Hannigan-Gilson of the Other Hudson Valley. Go to therivernewsroom.com or theotherhudsonvalley.com for more information.
Good afternoon, folks. My name is Craig Moser. I'm here from Philadelphia. It's a wonderful street festival, and you are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Elaine Shimono of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Thank you. Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXE 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Lena. I am a student from MC Smith, and I am also from Hudson.
So we're all in our homes right now because the WGXE studios are temporarily closed and we're all social distancing. How is that going for you all?
It's fine.
Yeah.
Good.
What are you all doing on a day-to-day?
Schoolwork. We're in the short story unit of our creative writing class. So that is fun.
1 hour ago, I got back from a video call, and I'm like, okay, it's time to call them. And I'm like, oh, wait, the show starts at 3 in my mind. And I'm like, okay, let's still go to call them. And when I found out the show started on 3, I was like, why didn't I think of that? And then I was like, oh, that means I'll get to call my friend. And then she doesn't pick up the phone anymore.
Oh, that's tough. Yeah, we're busy at the library. We're all working from home, and we're now shifting to try to figure out how to offer some programs online or to connect with people through email or through social media to get people feeling engaged and connected and well. So we're keeping busy, but it's fun. It's fun connecting with you all. And I had a reunion through Zoom with some old Bound by Books co-hosts the other day. So I started the show with a young woman named Quinn back when she was, I think, 11. She may have been 10 or 11 back in 2011. And so now she's off in college, as are some of the other original co-hosts. And so we had a little online reunion, which was really fun. And Ingrid is one of the people that Amelia overlapped with. So she knew that the show was still on, but some of them didn't know that the show was still going on, and they thought that was really cool. So, yay.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but Ingrid kind of sounds like one of my sister's friends because she has a friend named Ingrid.
I think she is friends with your sister.
Yeah, she might be.
Because I think they did some programs together.
Yeah.
Like through the Creative Writing Center. Writing Center? I can't remember what it's called. With Miss Wheeler.
Yeah.
But everyone's doing okay, hanging out at home?
Yeah.
Was that a yeah?
I miss my friends. I mean, I miss my teachers.
Yeah. I've still been connecting with a lot of people online, and I've even seen some people from afar, like out the window. but yeah, I definitely miss seeing all my library people in particular. So both my coworkers and all the people that we see every day at the library.
Yeah.
That's rough, but it's good to see you all.
Has
anybody been reading anything good lately? No, Amelia, sounds like you're reading some short stories.
Yeah, I read a few example short stories that were given to us from our teacher. Let me just pull them up on Google Classroom here for a second. In the meantime, Lena, what have you been reading?
I've been reading books that I was forced to read. I didn't like them. But I'm going to talk about my old favorite that I don't think I talked about on the show. Mirandy and the Brother Wind that I discovered this year in school. And it's a good book. That's all I'm going to tell you.
What is it?
But Mirandy and Brother Wind. It's like, I don't get what the book is about, because it's like Mirandy is trying to catch Brother Wind because they say if you catch him, then you will be able to have a wish granted by Brother Wind.
Huh.
Yeah.
Is it like a folktale?
Pretty sure, because like technically it kind of is, I think. I guess, maybe. I don't know.
That's a short story, or? Like,
well, yeah, actually, yeah. It actually took me two nights to read because it was assigned to read on two separate nights by my teacher, because she gave us four questions in total about the book. Like, it was pretty good.
That's great. So what are some of your short stories, Amelia?
The first one I read from our teacher is by a guy named... Well, my teacher only calls the author Rogers. So, here's the author. It's called Little Brother, TM, by Bruce Holland Rogers. And so it goes along talking about this boy named Peter who wants a little brother, TM, and that is actually what it's called. So immediately you're like, okay, the little brother is a product. It's like a trademarked thing. So he goes on and on about how he wants one for Christmas. And he ends up getting a little brother, but he doesn't like him very much. It's a baby, so it doesn't really listen to him. It messes with all his toys, and it does all this stuff. And he keeps turning little brother off, because he has a button on the back of his neck that you can use to turn it off. But when the brother's turned off, it can still feel, and it can still see, and it can still... It just can't move. So Mother keeps getting really mad at Peter for turning little brother off, even though he keeps doing it. So when she catches him turning him off for like the fifth time or so, she turns little brother back on and goes to hit Peter, or he thinks she's going to hit her, but she ends up feeling around the back of his neck, and that's how the story ends. So he's implied to also be a product.
That's pretty creepy.
It was a very good story. I really liked it.
Oh my God.
And then we, there was one by Ray Bradbury, who is the same guy who wrote Fahrenheit 451.
I love his short stories. I've read several of them.
Where is it? Where did it go? I know she gave us one by Ray Bradbury. Here it is.
I don't know who that is.
He's the guy who wrote Fahrenheit 451, which is a book about a world where books are burned. And... oh my gosh, look at me go trying to remember the actual plot of this. Because we watched the movie, and the movie was nothing like the book. Basically, this man is a firefighter, but in this dystopian society, firefighters are not what they used to be. They are the people responsible for burning books. And then one day he, I think, ends up stealing a book from a book burning, and he brings it home. And he ends up getting hunted down by this thing called the Hound, which is... I've seen fan art of it, and it looks really cool. The Hound isn't in the movie, and I was really sad about that. But it's basically this big mechanical dog that hunts down criminals. The short story he wrote was called Last Night of the World. And it was sad. Like, it's basically a husband and a wife and their children. The husband and the wife both know that the world is going to end, but they carry on their day just like normal. They don't tell their children. They don't really talk about it. They just know that the world is going to end that night, and they just kind of contemplate it as they go to sleep that night. And it's like really sad, but really kind of really beautiful writing.
Oh my God, that kind of sounds like a movie that I watched where it's like the world is going to end, and then the ending was sad and I cried about it.
Hmm.
If you want to hear the ending, just tell me after.
What's the movie?
I can't remember what it's called, but it's probably like the same name of that, because like I watched it when I was like 5 and it was pretty sad.
Hmm. I know that there's this adaptation of a Stephen King story called The Mist, where Stephen King actually said that he wished he had written the ending that they had in the movie, which I think is the highest compliment you can get from adapting a short story or a book. And I thought that was really cool. And my dad told me the ending of that movie, so I've never watched it because I already know how it ends. And it's like gut-wrenching. It's a heart-wrenching ending.
Oh.
The final short story that she gave us, which we were given today, is by Kurt Vonnegut, where it takes place in the world in the year 2081, where everyone is equal to the point where they handicap people who are more intelligent or more mobile or athletic. So they purposely put chips in the brains of overly intelligent people to go off every like 5 minutes or so to keep them from using their brains correctly. They handicap dancers to keep them from like dancing to the point that they can. It's wild. This one was wild. It was probably my least favorite because it was weird and confusing, but that's
the one
we
were trying to think of, like, what would be the middle place.
Yeah, it's basically a story about how, like, any concept, no matter how good, taken to, like, an extreme, can be very, very bad.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god. Right now I am confusion because, like, while you were just explaining it, I got confused already.
It does hurt the brain a little bit trying to think of how that would work. Like, how do you find the medium, the average? Well, I'm curious if it was an average or a median or, like, how they figured that out. Like, what is average, like flexibility or whatever?
Yeah.
Intelligence. Yeah. What if you're like really smart in one subject, but really not smart at all about another subject? So as like certain parts of your brain get adapted.
Yeah.
What happens if you're not like athletic or that smart? Like, would you just be like left alone by them?
The main character's wife is of average intelligence, so she is pretty much left alone, but he is of higher intelligence, so he ends up having a chip in his brain.
Oh, okay. So me and my friends are fine because, like, we don't understand anything because, like I said, we are confusion.
You're confusion.
Yes.
And then, finally, we had to pick our own short story to share with the class that we found on the internet, and then write our own short story, which I finished today. Ooh. I need to edit it tomorrow.
Are you happy with it?
I'm okay with it. It feels like something that could be interpreted many ways. I tried to go for a psychological horror, and I don't know if I pulled it off, but I hope I did.
You'll get feedback from your classmates or from your teachers?
Yeah. This is a rough draft. We turn in the final copy in a few days.
Cool. What was the one that you picked to read?
The short story that I picked off the internet. Mm-hmm. It was called The Man on the Stairs by Miranda July.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Was it good?
I liked it. It was all right.
I haven't read her stories, but I saw a movie that she, I think, wrote and directed and starred in that was good.
Oh, cool.
I've always been curious about her writing. I just haven't gotten around to it. I started reading a new book. I haven't been reading as much this week because I've been really busy with work, but I read a bunch of picture books the other day, and I started reading a new book of poetry called Woke, A Young Poet's Call to Justice, which is by Mahogany L. Brown with Elizabeth Acevedo and Olivia Gatwood, and it's illustrated by Theodore Taylor III. And so it's a collection of poems by those three poets. Mahogany L. Brown is the curator in residence for the library for this year, which means she's been working with our staff to come up with programs and activities sort of centered on her work as a poet, but also celebrating other authors and poets and works of literature. And this is her latest book. It just came out in March. We actually got the copy at the library the day that we were scheduled to close for our temporary closure. But I decided to take it with me to read while we were closed. And it has beautiful illustrations in it.
Ooh.
Very colorful.
Very long. I see very long poems.
Yeah, well, it's in a picture book format. And they're somewhat long for poems, but I think they also have like a bigger typeface because it's in a picture book. So it's possible if it was written in a smaller font that it would be a little shorter looking.
Mm-hmm.
But I can read one for you if you want.
Yay.
Okay. So this one is called Gift of Grace by Mahogany L. Brown. Forgive me, the most lonely request I know. It requires the gift of grace. Like a horse looping around Central Park, slow and metered, the wind can tell when the body is holding more weight than it can hold. This is how an apology begins. The bags holstered to the back, across the shoulders and the neck, the heaviness of disappointment, the sadness is so lonely, alone and alone. Sometimes the wind picks up speed. Sometimes the sky is still howling. Sometimes you have to wait for the quiet of the rain, let the storm pass and try again. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Forgive me, a humble request, such a beautiful song. I thought that's a nice poem.
That was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some listeners out there that know youth literature might recognize Elizabeth Acevedo's name as well. She won, I think it was the Prince Award last year. Oh, yes. Yeah, so she won the National Book Award for Young People's Literature, the Michael L. Prince Award, the Pura Belpre Award, the Boston Globe Horn Book Award, and the Walter Dean Myers Award for Outstanding Children's Literature for her book, The Poet X, which is a really good book. So she's one of the contributors. And then Olivia Gatwood, I hadn't heard about before reading this book, but she has some poetry chapbooks out, and her work's been featured on various networks like MTV, HBO, and BBC. Appeared in publications. And they're all from different places. So Mahogany's from Brooklyn, Elizabeth's from Washington, D.C., and Olivia Gatwood is from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Theodore Taylor is from Richmond, Virginia. So those four folks collaborated on this book together. That's lovely.
Cool. Yeah.
You know how I like poetry now and again?
Wait.
And actually, when this radio show airs, it will be April, which is National Poetry Month.
Ooh, yay.
Maybe for our next show, we should each find a poem.
Okay, I will share.
That'd
my
be cool.
Poem.
That'd
be yay. Yeah. I know the poem that I will share.
You already know what it will be?
Yes.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. But I'm probably going to have to search it up and copy it down on paper again.
Sure.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. Does anyone have any free reading that they're doing, or are you all just reading stuff for school right now?
I'm finishing up The Tattooist of Auschwitz, and then I'm going to go on to read an autobiography by a comedian, but I can't remember which comedian it is.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm curious if it's, so is it an autobiography that's also sort of humor writing?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Supposed to be comedic.
Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes comedians put out books that are autobiographical, but their main purpose is less about informing you about their life, but more about making you laugh.
Yeah.
Those are fun to read.
They are.
I like a good laugh. Yeah. What about you, Lena?
Yeah, sure. I spaced out for a moment and then I just heard, I want it for a comedic laugh. What about you, Lena? And I was like, oh, shoot, I don't know what she's talking about.
Tell us a joke. That wasn't what I was talking about, but tell us a joke if you have one.
Okay. Well, it's kind of a joke, I guess. So there was an airplane that was going to crash, and all the flight people who are supposed to take care of the plane took all the parachutes. There are only two parachutes left. The president said, I need to run a country, and then he jumped off of the plane. That's just what I'm going to say when everyone jumps off the plane.
What?
And when people would jump off of the plane, and then a father said,
there's so much lore involved with this joke.
Yeah, I guess. I don't honestly know what it is, but like, I'm just going to go with a joke. Okay. So the father said, I have lived a very long life, and you have a life to live. And so the boy said, don't worry, you can go off the plane because the president took my backpack.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have any good jokes, Amelia?
Absolutely not. I don't at all.
Oh. Yeah, I only have one.
Okay, tell us. Funny. Okay, tell me.
Just the only one that I've ever remembered is, how do you make a tissue dance?
I don't know. I don't know this one.
I do.
You know it, Amelia?
Say the punchline. Just say it. Put me through the agony.
You put a little boogie in it.
Woo. Okay, anyways. And then this is how I left the chat.
That's how you left the chat. She's like, bye.
Nina EXE has stopped. Yes, I have stopped.
You've stopped.
Yes, Lena EXE.
I think you're still there. Anyways.
Oh, it's raining out.
No.
I didn't know what that sound was.
Oh, you're right. It is raining.
On that note, I guess we should say goodbye for the week.
Oh, yeah.
To our listeners out there.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, we hope everyone out there listening has a good week. And reads lots of good books or short stories or poems or other
and washes
such things.
Their hands
and washes yeah. their hands.
Parents. Stay healthy, everyone.
Do y'all have a favorite song for singing while you wash your hands for 20 seconds?
I just keep washing until the paranoia goes away.
Oh. I wash until my hands get wrinkly. Yeah.
That sounds painful.
Yeah, it does.
I think you
actually.
Might be washing too.
Okay.
Long.
Hands. Okay, fine. I'll stop that. I guess I'll wash until after my three spurts of soap like that I put on because paranoia.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. But thanks everyone for listening and have a good week and happy reading.
Bye.
Bye.
Stay safe. Be well. Read books.
Soy sincero y no le tengo miedo. A... perseguí, de todo lo que yo te di, ya no me queda nada. El dolor lo tengo presente, el dolor lo tengo presente, el dolor lo tengo presente, el dolor.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for April the 2nd, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. The Trump administration decides Obamacare markets will not reopen. Groups that advocate for greater access to health care are slamming the White House decision not to allow people to apply for ACA, subsidized health plans, during the COVID-19 crisis. Xander Rice Hawkins is with Granite State Progress and says the government needs to make it easier to get coverage, not harder.
It's time for Trump and politicians who support him to drop the lawsuit against the Affordable Care Act, stop the sabotage, instead invest themselves in expanding access to care.
An estimated 77,000 New Hampshire residents remain uninsured. About 25,000 are thought to be eligible for Medicaid. People with rare diseases are particularly vulnerable during the coronavirus pandemic. West Virginia just enacted a new bipartisan law designed to provide them with more support.
The Rare Disease Advisory Council gives patients a forum to communicate with policymakers about pressing healthcare issues. The board also will educate patients about new treatments and healthcare developments, according to Fernando Andrzejewski with the West Virginia Hemophilia Foundation, whose son has hemophilia.
There's so many new therapies coming out. I think the last data I saw is that 560 drugs are currently under clinical trial for different types of rare diseases, which is the highest it has ever been.
The council will have 12 members appointed by Governor Jim Justice, including doctors, family members with rare conditions, and state health officials. Members will be appointed later this year. I'm Diane Bernard.
About 30 million Americans have a rare disease, according to the National Institute of Health. Health officials estimate about 180,000 West Virginians will be diagnosed with some form of uncommon medical condition during their lifetime. It might seem obvious, but the Centers for Disease Control has now confirmed that smokers, including those who use e-cigarettes, could experience more severe complications if they contract the new coronavirus.
It's well known that smoking increases the risk for respiratory infections, and new research shows those with underlying health conditions who contract COVID-19, including chronic lung disease due to smoking, are more likely to need hospitalization. President of the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, Matthew Myers, says those who have traded cigarettes for vaping should know the risks.
The data on e-cigarettes is less, but we know that e-cigarettes compromises your lungs, so if you ever needed a reason to think this was the time to quit, it is now.
I'm Roz Brown.
In addition to smokers and those with chronic lung disease, the CDC says people with diabetes and heart disease may be at increased risk of developing severe complications if they get COVID-19. This is PMS. The government's emergency stockpile of respirator masks, gloves, and other medical supplies running low and is nearly exhausted, leaving the Trump administration states to compete for personal protective equipment, that from the Washington Post. The Post quotes two DHS officials as saying the stores kept in the Department of Health and Human Services strategic national stockpile are nearly gone. Wednesday was Census Day, and nearly 2 million kids from birth to age 5 were missed back in the 2010 census, with Georgia ranking 5th among the states with the highest undercount of kids. Callie Jan is the census coordinator with the Georgia Family Connection Partnership.
10 years is most of a child's childhood. We're talking about the funding for programs impacting our education, healthcare systems, food access, all of which are becoming even more relevant now with coronavirus. We need to make sure that we have that in place to serve our kids.
Based on census data, Georgia receives roughly $23 billion annually through 55 federal programs. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser has promised to challenge the Trump administration's rollback of Obama-era clean air standards in court after revised rules were announced this week. Hannah Collazo is with Environment Colorado.
These clean car standards work. They were projected to double the fuel economy and cut global warming pollution in half for cars sold in 2025.
The administration projects the move will increase oil consumption by 2 billion additional barrels and cost consumers an extra $1,000 for gas over the lifetime of a new vehicle. Finally, our Eric Tegedoff reports the coronavirus outbreak is wreaking financial havoc for many folks, but credit unions are assuring people their money is safe.
Rick Metzger is a native of the Northwest and former chair of the National Credit Union Administration. He says COVID-19 has created a unique situation for people, but notes that it's different from other crises such as the 2008 recession, where the viability of financial institutions was in question.
What's really important, if you have savings in a credit union, they're federally insured up to $250,000. And no one in history has ever lost a single penny of their federally insured savings at a credit union. So that's the safest place right now for anyone to have their money.
Metzger says if folks withdraw cash and that cash is lost or stolen, it isn't insured. Also, many vendors are only taking electronic forms of payment over fears of further spreading the virus through paper money. Metzger says credit unions are offering help to people experiencing financial hardships, such as bridge loans. Folks also can consider restructuring their mortgages to help lower their financial anxieties. Metzger says it's important for people to stay calm.
About 4.3 million Washingtonians are members of a credit union. Hoping you are keeping a safe distance, this is Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Abby Huber is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The New York State Association of Counties released a sobering report this week detailing the economic impact of the ongoing pandemic. According to the report, regional governments are looking at the potential loss of $2 billion in sales tax revenue. The updated report presented two scenarios based on the factors that change daily, the first with a mild recession and a quick recovery, and the second with a more severe and prolonged recession. In both scenarios, industries related to tourism, restaurants, and recreation are hit the hardest. In the mild scenario, Greene County is estimated to possibly lose $35.5 million in taxable sales and $1.4 million in sales tax, or 4.3%. Columbia County would lose $38.4 million in taxable sales, resulting in $1.5 million in sales tax revenue, or 3.6%. The severe scenario has Greene County losing $4.4 million, or 13.4% of its potential sales tax. In Columbia County, projected losses jump to $4.7 million, or nearly 11% of potential sales tax revenue. Governor Andrew M. Cuomo is now saying the estimated loss of state revenue has more than doubled since State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli estimated the loss at $4 to $7 billion 2 weeks ago. Columbia County Board of Supervisors Chairman Matt Murrell, April 1st, announced county buildings will remain closed to the public through April 17th. Murrell said, and I quote, "This may well wind up going through till the end of April, but at this time we are proceeding in two-week increments. This is also coinciding with the current school district closures," end quote. The county also announced Office of Emergency Management has received personal protective equipment bulk deliveries from the state. Office Director David W. Harrison, Jr. said two deliveries have been received since the weekend. The deliveries are now received at the county safety facility, and from there, county staff split up the items and deliver them to Columbia Memorial Hospital, nursing homes, health care providers, county emergency management services, fire departments, and other eligible agencies and organizations. Sheriff David Bartlett reported the county is now conducting live video arraignments in the lobby of the county public safety facility. The lobby area is large enough to allow for appropriate social distancing, and it can be wiped down after each session. Bartlett said Columbia County is the first county in the 3rd Judicial District to provide this process. You can read Murrell's daily update at ColumbiaCountyNY.com. the State Department of Environmental Conservation and Agriculture and Markets, April 2nd, announced the 7th Annual Invasive Species Awareness Week will take place June 7th through 13th. The event is an annual educational campaign focused on invasive species. During the ongoing coronavirus emergency, organizations are encouraged to plan virtual events that incorporate social distancing guidelines and provide the opportunity for residents to participate from the safety of their own homes. DEC Commissioner Basil Sago said, and I quote, DEC encourages academic institutions, environmental organizations, municipal groups, and others to work with their local partnership for regional invasive species management to develop new programs, including virtual programs accessible online, end quote. According to the DEC press release, the goal of the event, and I quote, is to engage citizens in activities that promote an understanding of invasive species and their negative impacts and empower people to take action to stop the spread of these invasive pests, end quote. A link to the event website and a full press release can be found at dec.ny.gov. Rachel Silberstein is reporting for the Times Union. School districts in the region will continue to provide online instruction through spring break, according to guidance from the State Education Department officials. Governor Andrew M. Cuomo last week directed schools to remain closed until April 15 due to the coronavirus epidemic. The State Education Department has since clarified that districts must continue to provide remote instruction, meals, and child care every weekday through April 14th, to receive waivers from the 180-day instructional requirement. This applies even if the school was scheduled to be on spring break during that time. While it's likely the schools will remain closed past April 15th, not all districts have notified students that spring break has been officially canceled. Read the full story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello, I'm Dr. Dennis McKenna. I'm joined again today by Dr. Venditti, our hospital system general director. Today is day 25 of Incident Command, giving you the update from Albany Med on the coronavirus. Yesterday, we talked about the numbers in the region of people who had tested positive for COVID-19. We thought it was better to describe not what was just happening in Albany County, but in the surrounding counties. Yesterday, we described the number was just under 500. Today, there are 569 positive cases in the five surrounding counties. So that's about a 10% growth in cases from yesterday. That includes people who've been treated and have been discharged, includes people who never came in the hospital, and it includes the people who are in the hospital.